So, you know, your dream had been accomplished. You're one of the best in the world. And then the next day, thank you for your service. We need to send you away. But if you want to do something better than average, you have to work better than average. You have to expect better than average. Beat your level. And then when you get to the next level, then beat that level.
Welcome to the All In Podcast, where we dive into the mindset, habits, and stories behind inspiring and passionate individuals who know what it takes to go all in. In All In, you can expect real and raw conversations with athletes, coaches, and leaders on topics like mental health, mindset, training, wellness, habits, and much more. We hope to leave you feeling empowered with motivational stories, relatable experiences, and actionable advice, and I know that I personally walk away from each and every episode learning something new. In this episode, we hear from 10-year MLB veteran and Olympian Ryan LaVarnway. Ryan talks about his unlikely journey to becoming a pro baseball player, building a winning culture and mentality, confidence and self-belief, as well as how he knew it was time to hang up the cleats. So without further ado, let's go all in. Ryan, I'm so excited to have you on the All In podcast. I actually grew up playing baseball, so I'm especially excited to dig into your story. We've had a few different baseball players and baseball coaches on here. So how's it going? Welcome.
Hi, nice to meet you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm super pumped to dig into your whole story. I mean, there's so many different avenues I think we can take. So I'd love to start off just with how you grew up and how you first got into baseball, maybe all the other different sports that you might have touched on.
I grew up in Southern California. My dad always played like pickup softball on the weekend, so I was always kind of around it. And then when I was in kindergarten, I was probably right at the age when I could have started, but maybe wasn't starting anyway. And my kindergarten teacher told my parents that I wasn't a good sharer and that they should put me in a team sport. So then I got signed up and I took to baseball right away. I always played like pickup basketball at school. And I think I played rec ball a couple of years, but I was like the grinder that got the rebounds and dished it to the guy that was actually good at basketball. So that never really stuck as much.
I love that. As someone, I grew up playing team sports and then went to individual sports. So I always find it so interesting to learn about like team sport dynamics. And so that when you said that you weren't a good share, you got told you weren't a good share, your parents got told, and then they put you into that. Like, how did that change? Do you think that changed for you?
I think my little sister would still tell you that I still need to work on my sharing. But it, being a part of a team, I think especially since I played baseball from the time I was 5 to the time I was 35, about a couple of weeks ago, it's definitely shaped who I am as a person and taught me all my life lessons. And I think baseball, especially of all the sports, is such a great metaphor for, you know, 3 strikes, you're out, you hit, then the other team gets their turn. You get up once out of 9 times. So you have to wait your turn in line. You can do everything right as a player and then your team could still lose, or you could do everything wrong and your team could still win. There's just a lot of things that you have to learn as a player, a baseball player especially, but all sports are like that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think the lessons, and I mean, we're going to touch on it throughout this podcast, I'm sure, but the lessons that you can take, especially from playing team sports, and especially I find baseball is especially unique in that sense where it's not like a soccer or hockey where you're constantly, you know, moving the puck or the ball around and it's really like the team is playing together and meshing. There's a lot of individual performance when it comes to baseball. So over your career, how did you kind of balance that with maybe your team's not doing well, but you're doing really great or vice versa?
I think I grew up lucky in the sense that we had a good group that was the same age the whole way up. You know, when we were 8, we won the whatever the 8-year-old championship is. And then 2 years later, because when I was growing up, I don't know if it's the same now, but it was 2-year blocks, 2-year chunks pretty much. So it was 8U, then it was 10U. So when you were 9, you got crushed. But then when you were 10, you were the older team and then you crushed everyone else. So we had a great group. I think the core of us that was together from the time we were 8 all the way through high school, nobody really moved away. Everyone was super nice. Our families were all super tight. And we ended up from that group of 8-year-olds, we had like 6 or 7 guys that played college or better.
Oh, wow.
Which is super, you know how rare that is. Yeah. To have of that many guys that have that much potential and talent at such a young age. So we won a lot, and it wasn't really until I got to college that I played on a team that really lost a lot. And I went to Yale. Not the best base, you know, one of the best schools in the country, but not the best baseball in the country. And I had to learn how to kind of still play and do what's right for the team, but also to prioritize, like, I need to get mine while we're playing as a team, because I'm trying to go pro. I need to get noticed. I need to lead the country in batting average to get the attention of scouts. So that was a little bit different of a priority. And then in pro ball, you know, you're on winning teams and you're on losing teams because everyone in pro ball was always the best player and everyone was always on winning teams. So at a certain point, then something has to give.
Mm, I have so many questions from that I want to touch on, but I want to go like back to the earlier stage when you talked about playing with that group of guys who all had that potential. Did you all have that like natural ability when you were younger and people could see that? Or do you think it was like that environment of having all those people around you that you all pushed each other? Maybe there was one or two of you who were at that elite level and brought everyone up together.
That's a great question. It's like the chicken or the egg example, right?
You're right. Like,
I don't know. I don't know that I can look back 25 years and give you like a really honest answer to that. We just always had fun. And when you're on a winning team, you've felt this before. And I think all your listeners can relate to this. When your team is winning, it's easy to be a good player. Yeah. And when your team is losing, it's really easy to be an average player. And I'm going to go on TV later and talk about the Rockies, who I don't know when you'll post this episode, but the Rockies are on an 8-game losing streak as of today. And you watch their games and it feels like, you know, they try to pump themselves up. They try to like puff out their chest. And then the minute something goes wrong, they're like deflated. And here we go again. And it becomes contagious. Winning is contagious and losing is contagious. So I think you might make a great point of, was there two or three players on that team that were just really good and brought everyone else up to their level? I'm not really sure.
Yeah. Well, it's so cool that like that you had that group and that it ended up going that way and that you were able to carry that momentum of winning forward for sure. So how was that then transition into learning to lose? Because I think it's really hard that transition into college is hard for anyone. I think with the age demographic, especially student athletes, they're moving away from home. Most likely they have all the added pressure. You know, we're hearing a lot now about the mental health crisis with student athletes, especially with dealing with that. So how was it for you going into that? And then that added compound of you're used to winning, you're used to having this core group, and now you have to deal with these losses.
Yeah, losing was hard to learn how to do. Especially, I mean, I remember growing up, going to the games, and I would get nervous. I would always get nervous on the drive to games. My dad learned that the last song I wanted to listen to in the car was "Don't Worry, Be Happy." That kind of like calmed me down, calmed my nerves, and we were whistling along in the car. But it was like I cared about winning. This is like a priority. And my senior year of high school, I think we went 32-4.
Okay.
And of those four losses, I think two of them we had the lead and like got in a fight and had to forfeit or something ridiculous. So going to college, and I think we were under 500 every year I was there. It was definitely tough. But it was the culture. Like, we didn't expect to win. And that was new also. Like, growing up, we showed up to the field knowing we're going to win. You just know. And then in college, it was like, I hope we win today.
Mm.
A different feeling. And then you're not surprised when you lose. Like, you don't expect to win. As a freshman, that was how I played. I played very average freshman year baseball. And I had to really take it upon myself to make myself a better player and change my mindset and kind of rise above that. Like, we don't expect to win, because then I expect to play great whether we win or not.
Mm.
It's kind of where I went with it.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause you did mention earlier about how, you know, if you wanted to kind of make it from that school, especially not having maybe the strongest baseball program, that you had to put up the numbers and put up the stats. So focusing on that individual performance within that team performance, did the team culture ever change, or was it really just, okay, now I'm realizing that what I need to do here, if I want to go pro, is just focus on that individual. Obviously you want to win, but focusing on getting those stats, getting those numbers and changing your mindset? Or did the whole team culture ever kind of shift?
It's tough to say that as a team, we never took that next step and won.
Okay.
So from the outside, I can tell you that it's hard to tell you what was happening in the hearts and minds of my teammates. I know that it really comes down to the individual, especially in baseball, because when you're the pitcher versus the hitter, no one can help you.
Yeah.
Nobody can go up there with you. You can maybe run a hit and run every once in a while, or a sacrifice bunt. But ultimately, you have to hit the ball by yourself. Or if you're the pitcher, you have to pitch the ball by yourself. Infield, outfield, you need to make the play and throw it to the right base accurately by yourself. So I think there's probably a few guys on the team that it got to be contagious, where they wanted to be their best. And realistically, maybe we just didn't have the best players. Like Yale University, I was the first hitter to ever make the big leagues from there. So maybe we just didn't have the ability to. But I would like to believe that any team, especially in baseball, could beat any other team on any given day. My sophomore year, I think, what is there? There's 271 Division I programs in baseball, something like that.
Wow.
And we were ranked maybe 270th.
Oh, no.
But my sophomore year, we beat South Carolina, who was ranked 5th.
Oh, wow.
Who we should have no business playing with. I don't know why we were even there. But we beat them. And then the next day, we went out and we had a lead on them again. And we almost beat them again. So if we could have, I don't know what was the difference those days. Did we have the extra focus? Did we have the extra give a crap? You know, I don't know what it was, but I would like to think if we had carried that same level of intensity every day, maybe we could have been pretty good.
Yeah, I do love that. That's the aspect of sports that makes it so interesting, both as a player and a fan, right? Like just that belief that like on any given day, we could do this. And I think you have to carry that belief throughout your career, even if sometimes it's a little delusional when you're 270th and there's a 5th place. You know, you have to have that, because if not, like there's no chance. So you might as well like have that belief that, you know, there's that chance, that slim margin, that if we show up at our best, like it could happen. So I'm very curious with your story of why you chose to go to Yale, and how did you build that belief that you could be that first player to make it there? Because I think a lot of people, maybe they get picked up by a lower level program, not the one that they want, or they go to a program and there's never been someone who's made it. So it would be very easy to just say, you know what, I'm just going to focus on something else. Like I'm just going to play for fun. I'm never going to make it past that. Like, how did you carry that belief forward when there wasn't necessarily that path carved out?
Well, the first thing that I did was never look up who made it. I didn't do my research, right? So when I showed up to campus, I showed up knowing I was going to make the big league still. Didn't matter where I was. I had the belief very firmly in the back of my head that if I am good enough, they will find me no matter where I am. And I didn't do my homework. I mean, I did my homework for schoolwork, but I didn't do my homework as to who's made it from there before. Because it was irrelevant to me. I only know now that I'm the first hitter to make it to the big leagues because I figured that out like 3 years ago at like 30. I was like, why do people keep asking me, why did I go to Yale if I wanted to play in the big leagues? Like, why do I keep getting that question? I was like, oh, because no one had ever done it before. Okay. there had been two pitchers before. So I knew like it was possible maybe, but I didn't realize no hitters had done it. So Don't fill your head with the limitations. Why that's not productive for you. It's not productive for anyone. Don't set a ceiling. I firmly believe, and maybe I had to lead the country in batting average. Maybe I had to break every record to get noticed. So you can do that too. Why can't you lead the country or the league in batting average? I give lessons to high school kids all the time. And there's a junior that's on the junior varsity. He's like, well, I'm not going to get noticed if I'm not on the varsity. I'm like, okay, so you're on the junior varsity and there's someone in your grade ahead of you. What's the record for the junior varsity team? Do something great. You want to be noticed. The only thing that really matters is results. Like we need to focus on the process, and we need to focus on the day to day to be good and not get overwhelmed. But ultimately, they pay for results. Coaches get paid to win or to run a program that's not going to get the school in trouble and not to embarrass them, whatever. But ultimately, like college coaches and pro coaches, you get paid to win. What are your results? What are you going to do for them? Because they are going to put the best players on the field. And if you're great in practice, doesn't matter. What are you going to do in the game? So when I'm working with these high school kids, and if you're stuck on the junior varsity team, what's the best that anyone's ever done on the junior varsity team before? Because if you do that, you won't be on the junior varsity for very long. Like, what's your one thing that's going to stand out? I'll give you an example. Billy Hamilton. Have you heard of, do you know enough baseball enough to know Billy Hamilton?
I don't know.
Okay. Billy Hamilton has exactly one skill that he does better than anyone else on a baseball field, and that's steal bases. Okay. He when he first got to the big leagues, wasn't a great outfielder. Can't hit at all. Like, I've had hitting coaches say, if I coach him, I would tell him to bunt every single at bat of his life. He's just not a good hitter. But he does one thing very, very, very well, and he stands out because he steals 70 to 100 bases a year. He leads the league. And even though he doesn't, I mean, maybe he's a better player now that he's been around forever, but to get noticed, you have to do one thing really, really well that they can't ignore. What's your thing?
I think there's so many great lessons that you just shared there. One, focusing on what you can control, rather than, you know, I'm not on this team yet, or, you know, they're not going to notice me. It's like, well, what can you do? Right. And exactly what you said, just focus on, you know, what's that record? What's the results that I can put up? You know, they like, all I can do is that. I can't notice if they show up to my game and watch or whatever it is. Like, that's all I can do. And then I also love, that you shared about not focusing on the limitations. So I think that like naivety, like is very, sometimes it's important to have that, right? Like don't go into and overanalyze this goal or this dream that you have, because sometimes you can talk yourself out of it. Like, for example, you might have this big goal, and I hear it all the time with my friends, and then they spend months researching. And they're like, oh, like no one's done it before. No one from here has done it, or this. You know, for me growing up snowboarding, like I learned in my backyard, we don't have any big mountains around here. I was building like tiny little rails, getting my grandpa to weld them for me, little jumps. And I never thought like, oh, I had no coach. I had no like big jumps to train on. And suddenly I ended up on the national team or national team program at 17. And I was like, wait, this does not happen. But you don't realize until looking back, versus if I had at 13 years old thought, wait, I can never do this because no one from here has done this. It's going to be so hard. All these people have all these other access, resources, whatever. Then it's so easy to talk yourself out of it and not show up every day and like just give your best or do it for the right reasons. So I really love those two lessons. I think they're so important.
And following the crowd is easy. Mm. Fitting in with how much work your teammates or your competitors are doing is easy. But if you want to do something better than average, you have to work better than average. You have to expect better than average. You have to produce better than average. You have to, if you want to stand out, you have to stand out. You can't expect to do what everyone else is doing in practice, in the weight room, and on the field and get noticed. Ultimately, there's what, 6 billion people on the planet? You want to be special? Then you got to be special.
Yeah, I think that's so important. Also, I think that also kind of goes a little bit with the naivety in a sense, because if you over research and you just like, I'm going to follow the same program everyone else does or the same thing, versus figuring out what really works for you and what your thing is. Like someone could have looked at, you know, you could look at a stat and say like, I need to be the best at this specific thing because the last person who was drafted from here was the best at this certain thing. So maybe this is what coaches are looking for now, versus being like, this is my unique skill set. This is my unique strengths and weaknesses. And how can I double down on this specifically, which is back kind of to, you know, control what you can uniquely control.
Yeah. Control what you can control and then be great at it.
Mm. So I want to, let's get into your transition to pro. What was that like? What was, you know, that whole process of getting drafted? How did that all come to be?
So there was all sorts of pro scouts at all of our games. My junior year, I had established myself as someone worth paying attention to. And then I broke my wrist 2 weeks before the draft, trying to do too much, trying to dive over the catcher's head in our rivalry game, stupid move. And most of the scouts said, all right, see you next year. But I had already in my head, I had already left college. I had nothing left to prove. So I got drafted in the 6th round by the Boston Red Sox, showed up to spring training the next year and was completely intimidated and overwhelmed by the entire minor league system. Mm. I showed up for those of you that don't know about baseball and how the system works, the major league team, think of it as like the varsity on the high school team. And then AAA is junior varsity. AA is the sophomore team. Single A is the freshman team, and then the middle school team is short season, and there's six levels below the major leagues. So I show up to spring training as the new guy, bottom of the totem pole. They've got 2 to 3 catchers at my position on each of those teams. So I show up, you know, I was big King Tut in college, whatever. And now there's the two major league catchers who are in a separate camp. They're separated from us entirely. And then 22 other guys ahead of me, just with the Red Sox. And I know that there's 30 other teams with this same setup. And I was honestly scared. I was like, how am I supposed to beat out all these guys? Like, on my high school team, there was 2 other dudes, and I couldn't beat out the high school catcher. I had to play left field in high school because I wasn't good enough to play my own position. Then I went to Yale, where I was a big fish in a small pond, you know, and I did my thing. And now I'm a small fish in a very big pond. And the way I eventually learned how to deal with that was like, this big pond is all of the Red Sox farm system, but like, I'm not really competing against those guys yet. Like, I'm not even ready to compete against those guys yet. Stay in my lane, play against the guys that I'm on a team with, on a level with, in my like six degrees below the surface in the minors. Just do that. Just be where you are and excel at your low level. Beat your level. And then when you get to the next level, then beat that level. And then so on and so forth. But don't try to beat all six levels at once. And that was a huge weight off my shoulders. Because again, I was so intimidated to see all those guys ahead of me.
That is such an important lesson. That one really hit home for me because it was very similar where, yeah, big fish, small pond, right? I came from a place where there's not many mountains. You're winning all the local events. All of a sudden you're like, wow, Cinderella story. I'm part of the national team program. And then you're at World Cups against the people you see on magazines and you're fighting for 30th place. And you're like, wow, what, like, what world am I in? And it's very hard to not want to be like, this season, I want to win. I want to have that, like, and just be the best. It's like, wait a second, you got to step back and win. Like, that analogy is amazing. Win the level that you're at, right? Just kind of like a video game. Like, you're just here, you're not fighting the big boss yet. You're just moving up and you're trying to focus on like where you are. And I think that's something so many athletes, they get overwhelmed with the next stage or anyone else, right? Like, should I even try to do this because I want to go, you know, 20 levels up and it just feels impossible right now. But instead of looking at that 20 levels up, it's like, just look at that next step. And I think that is very, very hard to do. Are there any like tools you use, mindfulness, any practices that helped you really just focus when you, I'm sure inevitably you got overwhelmed and would keep looking back at that big picture, but trying to really focus on that small one? Is there anything that helped you?
I think it's similar to not doing my research about that there was no other hitters to make the big leagues from there. I think you need to, it's like a duality of focus. And this is something I'm Jewish. And for those of you that are not Jewish, this is something that the Jewish religion does really well, especially on one of the more holy holidays, is you recognize the greatness of God. And this is applicable to whatever God you believe in. Understand the greatness of God and understand that you will never be that great. Right? Accept your own failures and respect the distance between yourself and God. Think about that with your goals. Understand the greatness of your goals and the amazingness of the things that you want to accomplish and where your dreams are. And the duality of that is also recognize where you are right now. And there can be a great distance in between, and that's okay. Respect that distance, but you can't always focus on God. You can't always focus on your ultimate, huge, big, seemingly unachievable goal. Right now, where you are is where you need to keep your focus. In the back of your mind is where you keep where you're going.
I think that's one of the toughest lessons for so many people to learn, because that gap is the overwhelm, and that's where people quit, people get tired, people lose their motivation, and it just looking at that big piece. So breaking it down and trying to really just be where you are is just such an important practice. And it seems like you were able to kind of learn that early on. So how did you then move through the ranks and build your career from there?
Again, it's in order to get noticed, in order to do something great, you have to stand out. So when I was in single A, 5 levels below the top, I tied a record and broke another record. And then I got to the next level and I made the all-star team. And then I got to double A and I was player of the month. And then you get to triple A and you're player of the month again. And you're breaking a record. And not everybody is going to break records. That's not the nature of records, right? Like they stand for a little while and then someone comes along and that special person is special. But ultimately, if you want to stand out, you got to stand out. So at your level, beat it, beat the level. And that was kind of how I played my way to the big leagues. And when I retired recently, I posted an article about how I'm just not a great athlete, right? I'm not fast. I don't have quick twitch. I'm not agile, but the one thing I did well was hit, and my hitting stood out. That was my one thing that I did that took me and kept propelling me through the levels, ultimately to my goal.
So yeah, I read that and I really like that stood out to me, especially that and the mentality that you had of why not me? So I want to touch on those two things, starting first on, you know, some coaches will say, you know, focus on that strength, honing it in, working it. Other people bring up your weaknesses. So for you with, you know, knowing hitting is so important, did you just completely, you know, double down, triple down on your hitting? Or did you try to like bring everything up and try to be kind of more well-rounded? Or like you said, I mean, it seems like you kind of just went all in on your hitting.
So I would say at different points of my career, the answer varies.
Okay.
When I was minor league player of the year, three years in a row and all-star and whatever, hitting was my focus. And then I got the feedback from my coach of like, I don't care how much you hit, your defense is so bad, it's going to hold you back. You're not good enough and you'll get exposed. So then my focus shifted. Okay. Like now we really need to, like, this is holding me back. We really need to get this thing. I was told at different points in my career that you're not good enough. You're going to get exposed. And I was told, like, we know the hitting is going to be there. We know your strength is your strength. We honestly don't care. We need you to make this weakness playable. So that's the only thing we now care about. So then I put my focus totally on that. And I think that was also maybe too much because then my hitting suffered.
Mm.
And hitting and defense are two very different skills. And two very different focuses. So I wish that maybe earlier on when I was so focused on my hitting, I had put a little bit more attention to the defense. And then when I put all my attention to the defense, I wish I had kept a little bit of focus on hitting. I think there needs to be a balance there. So I can't tell you one way or the other, but I would say make your strengths strengths and make your weaknesses less weak.
Right. Like strong enough that they don't completely hold back that strength ability, but get that.
Yes. Strength. But if you focus only on the weakness, then your strength won't propel you to the where you want to go.
To the next level. Right. That makes a lot of sense. No, I think that's so important. And I think a lot of people are like, I just got to be good at everything. And, you know, maybe I'm like, for example, in the sport of CrossFit, let's say you're naturally strong, but you're really bad at gymnastics. And it's like, okay, I just got to work on the gymnastics. All of a sudden your strength is now, you've been passed by so many people that it's completely mediocre. You're not winning those events. And you're still, sure, you made some progress in gymnastics. It's still weak compared to the margin. That's like, maybe focus on getting that strength, win those events, and then damage control on the others. And that can actually be better than just, you know, trying to kind of be mediocre at all.
I think triathlons are a really great example of this.
Yeah.
And I interviewed for my podcast somebody that was in the top 20 for Ironman, and he was a fantastic swimmer, great swimmer. He gets out of the water, he's in first place every time. And then as people start to pass him on the bike, he's like, well, bike is not my strength. And I have to accept that. It like literally people are passing you in a race. Yeah, so like you're losing, but like his run is stronger than the bike. So he knows I'll pass them again. And if he tries to really push it on the bike, then his run will suffer.
Yeah.
Because he'll use all of his strength, all of his body. So it's really is a like, understand your strength, understand your weaknesses and where can you find balance in that? But don't let your strength stop being a strength.
Mm. I think that's a great lesson. Now, I read that you were traded 26 times over your career. And as an individual sport athlete, like the whole thing about being traded, the possibility of being traded is not something I've thought of. Obviously, you know, there's sacrifices you have to make, places you have to move for certain teams or things like that. But how did you handle like that whole process, not just with your playing, but also like your personal life? And how did you handle kind of going all in on like you're in a new place, you want to maybe build roots. You want to, whether it's build relationships, you know, just play for that team, get to know the fans, the city, you know, build that and like go all in on that. Not just thinking it's temporary, but still obviously having that over your head of like, it could be temporary.
Yeah. So it wasn't just traded 26 times. A lot of those times were within the same organization, but being sent down from the majors.
Mm.
And you're riding a bus overnight to a lesser city, playing in front of 2,000 people, not on TV, staying at the Courtyard Marriott, which there's nothing wrong with, but it's not the Ritz.
Yeah.
And your pay is less than 1/6 of what it was the day before. So it's very much a like roller coaster ride, not just of emotions, but physically and financially and attention wise. So it's so hard to deal with, especially as a young person.
Yeah.
And I didn't deal with it great right away. You try to do more like, oh, I wasn't good enough, so now I'm going to do extra.
Mm.
What happens when you try to do more than you're able to? What do?
Get injured or.
Yeah. You suck.
Yeah.
You suck. Right. That's not what makes you.
Yeah.
So eventually I learned to be where I am, right? If I'm in AAA, be a really good AAA player. And if I'm in the big leagues, try to be a really good big league player and just be where your feet are, because you can't play for that other team while you're on this team. And if you aren't here, then you're not going to play very well either.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's so, it's such an important lesson to learn. And it's really hard to learn when you're young. And I wanted to also ask about, because I also read that through that process, you know, you're thinking, like you said, like you're thinking maybe I need to do more. And so you get kind of that rejection and you're like, did I do enough? What did I do? Like you're breaking all these things down. And I think everyone has experienced rejection in their life, whether it's a relationship or it's a career. They didn't get a job or they got fired from a job, or it's in sports. You didn't make a team. And you can get really introspective in that time, of course. And I think there's obviously there's lessons to learn from everything. And that's kind of what gives you experience in life. But how did you get over like that rejection and maybe even that fear of rejection that can come with all those times that you get your hopes up, you're like, finally I'm here. And then you're sent back down and you're overthinking what did I do?
I think the thing that really helped me was acceptance. And I had to accept that the business of baseball wasn't trying to hurt my feelings. It wasn't making a judgment on who I am as a person or necessarily as a player. So I don't know how applicable this is to other aspects of life. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. But if I'm behind a guy that's making $20 million, he's going to play.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I'm better than him or not. And it's not a marginal improvement that is going to make the coach choose me over him, because they've made a choice already. I would need to be so much better than that guy, so glaringly better. And even if I was, I still might have to wait my turn. I might have to wait till his contract is up, because they're going to play the guy that's making $20 million. There have been so many times in my career when I was playing the best I've ever played. I was playing amazing. And it didn't matter because that guy was ahead of me. And there are other times I was playing terribly. I struck out 10 times in a week. But that guy ahead of me got hurt and now there's a need. So it really is the business of baseball and kind of the magic of opportunity. And what do you do with that opportunity? And just to try to make the parallel to the non-sports world, right? If you say you want to be a manager at your company, well, somebody's already in that role. So you either need to be ready when that person gets promoted out of that spot or decides to change companies. You need to be prepared for that opportunity, or you need to accept that you might have to wait, or you might have to make a lateral move to another company to get that spot. Because any role that you want, any position you want, unless you create it yourself as an entrepreneur, which is a great option, then that opening is going to have to happen, and you're going to have to be prepared and ready for it when it does.
Hmm. I think that's, it goes back to what you said earlier, just controlling what you can control, right? And all these other things are kind of out of your control. And that acceptance lesson, I think, is so important, that there's other things that are going on, and it doesn't have to be a reflection of you or your worth or what you bring to the table. There's just other things going on, right? The world is bigger than just you. So you can do all that you can, but you have to kind of release that result, I guess, of what can happen after that work.
Some perspective and some acceptance.
Yeah, for sure. So the Olympic experience, I want to touch on that quickly, because I think it's interesting in different sports, right? Olympics are everything, or they're like an added bonus. And it really depends on, you know, the sport and the structure. So for you, was that always a dream? Like, did you always want to go to the Olympics?
I've always loved the Olympics, but baseball hasn't been in the Olympics.
Yeah.
There was 13 years that it wasn't, and it won't be in this next one. So that was something I didn't even dare to think about, because it wasn't possible. And when they announced it was going to be in the Olympics, I knew I wouldn't make Team USA, although I actually got recruited by them. But I had already been committed to Israel. And it's pretty amazing that a country with one baseball field made it to the Olympics. It's pretty cool.
That is pretty crazy. Now I'm curious, because it seems kind of almost like the whole Yale experience, where, you know, you had that, where there wasn't necessarily all these players or the program that's top ranked. So how was that culture, I guess, going into the Olympics? Did the team believe, like, you think that you would rank? Was it the underdog mentality? You know, how was that whole culture?
So I've played for Team Israel for three international major tournaments.
Okay.
And it was the World Baseball Classic in 2017, and the Olympics in 2021, and then the World Baseball Classic last month. We very much embrace the underdog mentality. And even if we didn't want to embrace it, we wouldn't really have a choice, because everyone puts it on us also. In 2017, ESPN came out with an article, called us the Jamaican bobsled team of baseball, said that we were a team made up of wannabes, has-beens, and never-wers.
Oh my gosh.
And that we perfectly filled out the cast of the Bad News Bears for a team that had no business being on the field, but somehow found a way to win.
That is quite an article.
Quite the compliment, if you will.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think that was the best thing that happened to us, because then we embraced that. And I think really, really special teams have that ability to take a negativity, or to take smack talk or low expectations, and embrace it and flip it on its head.
Mm.
The same thing happened when I was on the Marlins in 2020, the COVID year. We opened up the season in Philadelphia. Philadelphia had high expectations for their team, and the Marlins hadn't made the playoffs in 17 years, had one of the lowest payrolls in the league. And the Marlins won on opening day. And after the game, in the post-game show, one of the pundits said, if the Phillies are going to have any chance this year, they're going to have to beat the bottom feeders, teams like the Marlins. And what did we do? We made t-shirts that said bottom feeders the next day. and we called ourselves the bottom feeders. And when we said it, we didn't hear the negativity. We heard the, we'll show you.
Mm.
Why not us? And it's the Team Israel that you would talk about the Olympic experience. That's what we felt. They're like, no one's giving us a chance. Watch what we do. And we had that bigger expectation. You know, we accept who we are, and we know where we are on any given day. And we had that vision, and it's the duality.
Mm. And overall, like, how, yeah, I'm sure you look back at that whole experience with fond memories. And, how was it? And what's the future of the program like now for Team Israel?
So all the money that we've raised as a team helps build new fields. They've built a second field, and they've broken ground on a third. And the program is growing. Participation in the country has doubled.
Wow. That's,
and so they are the official host of the European Championships next year, or in 2 years, which is incredible. Because that never would have happened. And it's just cool to see the growth. I think that it's still very much not the most popular sport in the country, but it's growing, and hopefully it continues that way.
That's incredible to see. That's so cool to see the growth. I want to move into your retirement now. And I know it's fresh, which is, I think it's kind of fun. We've, you know, we've had other athletes come on here and talk about the struggles of the transition, and but a lot of them are kind of removed from it. So what has it been like, and how did you know that it was time for you to move on?
Oh man, it's definitely different, because when I was playing baseball, no matter what else was going on, everything felt auxiliary. It felt ancillary. It felt like I know what my most important thing of the day is. So all these other, you know, things feel like bugs on the side, like they're bothering me, they're on the side, whatever, but like they don't matter, because ultimately the game tonight is the most important part of my day. So the fact that I don't have a solid most important part of my day, I feel a little bit lost sometimes. And I'm pursuing and chasing a bunch of different rabbits right now. And, you know, I'm writing a children's book. I'm thinking whether I want to write a mindset book for adults and businesses. I've been working on my keynote speech. I'm broadcasting some with the Rockies. I'm managing my, you know, rental properties and trying to build my social presence and my podcast. And sometimes I feel like I touch all of those things in a day, and I was able to move the needle just a tiny amount. And then the day ends and I'm like, did I do anything today? So it's very much a different mindset that I'm still learning, but I knew I was ready to be done because I had a little girl last year, and I don't want to move her around the country and keep her away from our family as much as my wife and I have had to move and sacrifice for the last 15 years.
Yeah, it's athlete transition is definitely difficult, but it seems like, you know, with your family growing and all these other opportunities and things in the air, you have other things, you know, to focus on. I think sometimes people, they leave the game early when they get injured or something happens, and all of a sudden they have nothing to fall back on. Did you build any, like, was there anything that you worked on while you were playing to prepare for that transition?
The last season of my career, I started building some social media platform. You know, I have a lot of fun on Instagram. I make silly videos, and I started a podcast in the last year. So I'm hoping those two things continue to grow and turn into something. But no, yeah, it's almost like a fresh start. It feels like there's a lot of possibilities, which is exciting and also overwhelming.
Yeah. For sure. I think it's like that whole, you know, you focus your whole life on something, and now it's, and you've always had that, maybe that one goal, that single-mindedness. And now it's like the world is your oyster, but it's like that too many options. Like when you go to a restaurant and you have pages and pages of like, you can do this, you can order this, 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 this. And you're like, I have no idea what I want. I don't know which is like the most meaningful for me to choose. And it can be definitely like an overwhelming time for sure.
Exactly.
Okay, so I have a few questions that I ask everyone when we're nearing the end. But before we get into that, I want to ask, you know, baseball is 99% mental, or maybe
the other half is physical.
Yeah, exactly. I love that quote. But what mental tools, or just even lessons in general, do you wish that you had known earlier in your career?
One thing I told myself a lot towards the second half of my career that really helped me was, it doesn't matter if you're in a position to fail or a position to succeed anyway. Because there were so many times that I would get called up to the big leagues and it's a great opportunity, but I would ride the bench for 7 days before I got to play. And then I'd play in the day game where we didn't get to take BP before. And I feel all out of rhythm and all out of whack. And I would let that affect me, or I would let that be a crutch or an excuse for why I didn't play well. And then ultimately, results are the only thing that matters. Doesn't matter that you were out of rhythm. Doesn't matter that the coach didn't post a lineup until 5 minutes before the game. So yeah, whether you're in a position to succeed or a position to fail, succeed anyway.
I think that's so important, especially it seems in your second half of the season, that would be such an important, or second half, sorry, of your career lesson to learn, because you've gone through those experiences time and time again, where things might not have been on your side. You know, I was in a judge sport. You never know when there's like the politics of the judging and different things. But again, going back to like control what you can control, and all you can manage is your reactions, not all those outside things. So I think that's such an important lesson for the next generation who might be listening.
I think the other way to say that is nobody cares about your excuses.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. All right. So I have a few questions that I like to finish things off with. The first one is, out of all your daily habits, what is the single biggest game changer for you?
When I do it, meditating is the most helpful thing.
Just
10 minutes, either try to focus on nothing or your breathing or a single point focus. I think it gets me in a great headspace, and it allows space for creativity and thoughtfulness and being in the present. Or the next step of that is really focusing on that big picture vision that you want to make happen.
I'm curious, actually, has that changed since you transitioned out of playing baseball? Like, was your meditation more performance focused before, and then now it's maybe on a certain vision that you have, or has it kind of stayed the same?
A lot of my meditative practice is really on just clearing the mechanism. And I think giving yourself space for the monkey mind to go away, because the second you try to think about nothing, you can't stop thinking about everything.
Yeah.
And that's how I, at least that's how my head works. So I think there's a lot of sport that turns into like performative physical genius, and you need to give space for creativity. You need to give space to get the clutter out of your head.
I love that. Okay. Next question is, what does going all in, or just the phrase all in, mean to you?
It means don't allow distractions. Don't allow the BS. If you need to not go out with your friends so that you can get enough sleep so you can recover, do it. If you need to not have that ice cream after dinner so that your body's in better shape, so you recover, so you can perform your best, do it. If it means missing every birthday party, every wedding, every whatever, because you have tournaments or a schedule, do it. Go all in.
Have you ever, I'm curious, have you ever, is there like moments that you regret missing any of those things, or was it all worth it, you know, for that end result?
So there was one conversation that always pops out in my head of one of my best friends from college. I was supposed to be a groomsman in his wedding.
Okay.
But he got married in July. Well, I can't come.
Yeah.
You want me to come? I'm unavailable from February 14th until October 1st.
Mm.
And his mom was like, what do you mean you can't take a couple of days off? It's like, I can't. I'm playing. This is my job.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a choice for me. It didn't feel like I had to sacrifice, because I had already made the choice. Mm-hmm. I made the choice when I was 5 years old. And then when it started to feel like a sacrifice, the last year and a half of my career, the last 2 years, that's when I knew I was almost done. When my niece and nephew were born and I couldn't be there, and they had birthday parties, and I was missing their baby stage, and I was missing watching them grow up. And then when my daughter happened, when she was born, and I knew I didn't want to miss those things anymore, and I wasn't willing to go all in, and I wasn't willing to make the sacrifice anymore, that's how I knew I was done.
I'm really glad that I asked that, because I really appreciate that answer. I think a lot of people could definitely learn from that, because I think knowing when you're done, knowing about these decisions, it's so difficult, especially athletes who are so focused, right, on making those sacrifices. And when they get to that point, it's so hard to decide of, you know, what am I feeling? I'm questioning this. So it's really cool to see that process and how that changed for you. And you just realize that maybe like some priorities are shifting and things are changing. And you made that just, you know, to obviously probably tough decision to walk away and focus on those things. So yeah, I commend you for listening to yourself and making that decision.
Thank you. And you know what? I feel grateful that I got to make the decision, because there's a vast majority of people that the game makes the decision for them.
Right. Totally. Okay. Well, the next one is, you're at the end of your life, you're looking at everything that you've done. What is that legacy that you want to have made when you're looking back?
I want people to feel like they were encouraged by me.
Mm.
Or, I mean, not even, I don't even need to be that important. I want people to have been encouraged, because people will forget what you said. They'll forget what you did. But they'll always remember how you made them feel.
Mm, that's so important. And what is one piece of advice that you would leave for the next generation of athlete, or anyone with, you know, big goals coming up who's looking to go all in on them? What's that one piece of advice?
Raise what you think is possible. And this was something I wrote in that article, and I think it was such a turning point for me, of when my high school coach said, "Why not you?" And I thought there was no chance it would be me. But he said, why not? And then in college, when I told my coach I wanted to be an all Ivy League player. And he said, why would you stop at all Ivy League? You should be all American. It's just something that never entered my cosmos of something that was possible. So if you want to do something cool, what could you do that's even cooler? Like, don't limit the possibilities on what you can accomplish and how good you can be.
Love that. That's a great way to leave it off. I want to ask you, I'm going to definitely put in your Instagram and all those things in the show notes, so people want to see those videos you mentioned and things like that, they definitely can go and click there. But I know you have a podcast and you seem to be juggling tons of awesome, cool opportunities that are coming up. So is there any that you want to share, things that you have coming up, where people can find you and keep track of all that?
Oh, sure. That would be great. Check out my website for all updates on me, ryanlebarnway.com. My podcast is called Finding the Way. And I talk to elite performers, you know, Olympians, mindset coaches of people that have worked with Kobe Bryant and just the best of the best. And I try to peek behind the curtain of what helped them get there and what are the tips and tricks. And hopefully the audience can take something away for their own life.
I love that. Definitely go check that out. Yeah, we're going to have everything in the show notes again. And thank you so much for coming on and being so open with your story, sharing, you know, the highs and the lows, as well as advice for the next generation. I know even for me, there were so many great pieces of things, especially when you talked about kind of knowing when it was time to move on, when you maybe weren't ready to, or weren't willing to make those sacrifices anymore. I think that a lot of people can relate with that. So I appreciate that. And I appreciate you for taking the time.
Yeah. Awesome. This was fun.
If you like the podcast, the best way to support it is to leave a review and share it with a friend. Truly leaving a written review, letting us know what you liked and want more of, and sharing the podcast so more people can benefit is the best gift you could possibly give us. Thanks again for listening. I'm so grateful for your support, and I'll catch you on the next one.